Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And I'd like to ask you, how are you dealing with the chaos in the world today? Are you okay about it? Likely not. And yet, here we are in the middle of it, and we want to know more about it, understand it. Maybe there's hope. If we can understand it better, maybe we can solve it better. So to help us understand it better is the author of a study, of a special study that was done asking people about their feelings about all this. And it was published, and the New York Times wrote about it, and that's how I learned about it. So I asked one of the professors to be a guest on the show and talk about this study. And he's from Temple University, Kevin Arsenault. Kevin, Vin, actually, you like to be called, right?
Yeah, that's my nickname, but I go by both.
Okay. So we have a friendly audience. We'll call you Vin, if you don't mind. You did this incredible study interviewing thousands of people about how they feel. What are their base? Maybe it's about their base instincts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, and I should plug here my co-authors, Michael Bang Peterson and Matthias Amundsen, both at Aarhus University. So this is, what I'm about to say is in all of my work.
But yes, that's a university in Denmark.
In Denmark, that's correct. Thank you for
most people wouldn't have heard of it.
Yeah, you're right. Exactly. And you know, we interviewed at this point, we've interviewed close to 8,000 people. Some of them living in Denmark, most of them living in the United States. And the key, if I had to like summarize really quickly what it is that we do and find, is we were interested in whether or not there is a, if you could think about it this way, a personality predisposition to crave and want chaos as a way to essentially get power. And it seems that, sadly enough, our supposition is correct, that there are a group of people that do see chaos as a means to an end. It seems to be a kind of mindset that they have, a way that they view the world. And it causes them to do some stuff that, creates chaos.
Right. So these people are sold on the opportunity that chaos creates the kind of change that they want.
Yeah.
And they don't care what it takes, because if they did, there wouldn't be chaos. It would be more strategic.
That's right.
But they don't have a strategy.
Yeah, you know, you could think about it that way. You could also think about it this way, is kind of messed up as it would be to think about it. But for them, chaos is the strategy. Maybe it's not an effective one. but for them, you know, they tend to see themselves as marginalized. And we could talk about later about whether or not that's the case. But they see themselves this way. And for this group of individuals, they see chaos as a way to invert the power structure so that they can be on top of it. That's their hope.
Right. So one of the quotes that you asked them about, or one of the answers they came up with, that a large percentage of these thousands of people, I don't remember the exact percentage, were willing for everything to burn down.
Yes. Yes. So we asked a series of questions. One of them, this is how psychologists go about figuring out personality traits. They ask people to ask a series of questions. They ask people a series of questions. How much do you agree or disagree with a set of statements? And then you sum up all the responses and you get a score, right? You know, one could criticize that approach, but it's what we did. And one of the questions that you picked out there was the statement, along the lines of, when I think about all of our institutions, I can't help but to think, let them all burn. And we actually had close to 40% of the sample did not reject that statement, okay? Because the way in which you ask these questions is people can strongly agree, somewhat agree, neither agree or disagree, disagree or strongly disagree. And so that means only 60% of people either strongly disagreed or disagreed with that statement. And then the number is closer to 20% of folks who actually just outright agreed with it. So we found that to be a bit surprising. That might say more about our biases, but nonetheless, it's definitely intriguing.
Well, right now we're also in a time not only of chaos, but of bad deeds, of all kinds of things happening in the world that harm others in ways that many of us are outraged. Mm-hmm. And we wonder, how can there be so many people? Well, then again, in World War II, we had, you know, the Gestapo, and we had so many German soldiers willing to torture and kill people. And there's been research on how can you take normal people and turn them into ogres? And it, apparently many people are vulnerable to that.
Yeah.
And it's very sad that so many people can turn on each other and harm each other. And we had that, remember that country in Africa where one tribe was slicing up their neighbors who were
the Rwandan genocide.
And that was hard to believe, that you'd have a whole population willing to destroy people violently.
That's right.
And so you never know where it's going to pop up. And here, you know, Trump is suggesting that there can be a civil war if he's not reelected. And then you think, well, wait a minute, what does that mean? You know, what are people going to do to each other if we have a civil war? And it might be worse than we think.
Mm-hmm. I think that's right. And you know, we're not, you know, I'm not an historian, and neither are Michael and Matthias, but it's difficult not to sort of see that parallels with the rest of history, that when you sort of view it through this lens, you know, I hate to say it, but it's a bit of a depressing take that we've come up with. But it's that, you know, there are people who use chaos as a way to achieve their ends. And that's not a new thing. That's not a new phenomenon. What I do believe has happened over the past, you know, since World War II, I think there was an establishment in Western democracies of a type of calm, a type of established order. And as we progress in time, it sort of makes sense. I think it's just the entropy of time, of history, that people become unhappy with that established order. And it need not even, and one of the most interesting things I think we find in our paper is that it doesn't seem to be ideological. So it's not like this is all coming from the left or coming from the right. People both on the left and right are unhappy with the established order. And among those individuals, there are folks who say, well, you know what? Let's just burn it all down. And, you know, on the one hand, you might see that as a positive outcome, right? If you think that the established order to come out of that is more utopian, right? So you could imagine an idealistic way to see this. Unfortunately, this isn't just idealists saying, yeah, let's just scrap everything and start something new and better. There are a group of people who say, let's do this so I can gain, or my group can gain more power. And one of the things that worries me the most in politics today, not just the United States, but beyond, It's that there are these movements of groups that seem to be sowing seeds of doubt and mistrust simply because they themselves want to be the dominant force in that society. And, you know, you mentioned Trump. I think, you know, I have grave concerns that is in some ways what he's interested, whether he would put it in these terms or not, but that is part of the way in which he approaches the world is.
Yeah, I once knew a guy who I worked with. He was a very powerful man in New York, and we can mention him, Fred LeBeau, and he would tell me, "I create chaos because I'm smarter than everybody who is in chaos, so it allows me to control things better."
Yeah.
And maybe Trump feels that way too. Is that, yeah, he's going to break all the rules, throw everything into chaos, but he knows what he's doing. He thinks he knows what he's doing.
Exactly. And I think what you can sort of see is that's very destabilizing for democratic systems, right? Because they are premised on a notion that there are a set of norms that sort of bind how people behave. And I think, you know, we could have a reasonable discussion about whether or not those things benefit a privileged few and whether or not there should be, whether or not those things should be upset. But I would assert that there's a limit, right? That at the end of the day, for a society to function, there have to be a set of operating rules about how people engage with one another.
Yeah, we need to have an honorable society. And what is honorable? I mean, honorable is goodness. And I think a lot about evolution, and the three tenets of evolution are truth, beauty, and goodness. And we really need to embody all of that to move forward. But we're talking about higher truths, let's say, not political truths, because debatable.
I completely agree with you.
And so we're moving forward to a time that the evolutionaries call an integral society. And we've come from a time where we've been through recently through a green, these different eras in time had different colors. And we've been recently through the green period, which was too idealistic and destroyed itself only because it wanted everybody to win everything all the time. And then you come up with a guy like Jordan Peterson who says, no, we can't accept that. We have to have winners and losers.
Yeah.
And then how do you legislate that? So we have this integral society that actually embodies the best of all the previous societies that we were trying to eliminate, get rid of. Trump represents the red era of dictatorship and sovereign power. And in those days, truth was held only in the mind of the dictators, and everybody had to agree or else. We don't have a society like that anymore, so that's why Trump is in trouble. He can't be that kind of dictator that he'd like to be. So we're coming to a time where we have to understand what everybody needs and find out, well, we can't have a socialist society because people don't understand the word socialism to be positive. They think of it as communism. And so it's been, you know, the term has been politicized, because we live in a social society. We have police departments and Medicare and all kinds of things that people like. So why would they not like other things that they could end up liking? But they don't want it because it's called socialist. So we have to move forward into an era that maybe doesn't have a clear label. Or at least you know, can't be pinned down the way politics pins things down and tries to vilify any opportunity that can exist. Just progressive is a word that's supposedly bad. And what does progressive mean? It means progress. But a lot of people want to make America great again, meaning that let's bring it back in time rather than forward. And we're coming out of those times that didn't work. So.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that sort of highlights the fundamental, I think the fundamental tension in all societies is around openness and progress and tradition and, you know, a set of clear rules. And I think that fits in with this topic today about chaos, which is, you know, my personal belief is that a society actually kind of needs that tension, right? Like having too much of one or too much of the other has its problems. I think too much tradition creates a hidebound society that doesn't progress. But a society that says, hey, there are no rules, everything's open, well, that's going to breed chaos, and it's going to make it difficult, I think, at the end of the day, for there to be progress.
Right.
So, you know, I think the sort of happy theory was, oh, democracies are a way to sort of allow this tension to sort of exist and often bust out in the open and ugly ways, but nonetheless, you know, as long as people are open for compromise, you can reach.
Well, we have to have an enlightened society, and we don't have that. Humans, obviously, too many humans can't allow free thought.
You know, that's funny. There are days I wake up and I agree with exactly what you just said. You know, like, hey, maybe the Enlightenment was just a fiction that we tell ourselves, you know, that we went through this dark period and then there was an Enlightenment and here we are, you know, educated and we use the term advanced societies, you know, these sorts of things. But perhaps it's just an illusion.
I hope not.
on other days, I wake up and I think, you know, humans do have a capacity for reasoning and what I call reflection. And it's not just me, but there are philosophers and psychologists who think of reflection as the ability to second guess ourselves and the values and tenets we hold dear to say, sometimes I have to reflect on these and challenge them.
Well, let's call it wisdom.
Yes, and you know, it goes by many different.
Right, but how many people have that capacity?
That's the question. I think that's the open question. And so, you know, a few years back, published a book with my colleague Ryan Vanderwielen, where we tried to tackle this question, but in a very narrow way, being social scientists. And, you know, our conclusion from this, you could see it in a glass half empty or glass half full way, depending upon whether you're an optimist or a pessimist. But essentially, there are a healthy percentage of people that appear that they can engage in this kind of second guessing themselves, but it's not a majority.
That's the problem.
It's not a majority.
Right.
And so the pessimistic take is that's the problem. How can a democracy function if that's not the case?
I guess you have to learn to speak to those people.
Well, that's the more optimistic take, is how a democracy or how any political society or set of institutions is structured can either ask more or less of the body politic in terms of how much you know, how much do you want them to push against their instincts. And I think democracy is a difficult form of government. It does ask a lot of people. And when I think it works well is when you have, and we're not the first people to say this, you could go back to the framers of the Constitution, that you do need an educational system that's premised on getting people to see the set of norms that society needs to be based on and live by. And
wise education.
Yeah, exactly. And then more than that, you need a set of the people who are in power, who gain power, are willing to live by those rules.
Right. And I think we need strong people in power who can live by those rules, who want an enlightened society and want to have communication, discussion, an open forum so we can come to better solutions. And I think that's true for everything in our world right now.
That's right. And I think that, you know, the big question for me, and this is when I'm sometimes an optimist and sometimes I'm a pessimist, is, you know, who makes people in power play by a set of rules, right? The Enlightenment, the idea behind the Enlightenment was, okay, we're all going to agree on the notion that a set of values are the best ones to live by. And those would be, you know, using science as a pursuit of knowledge, having freedom be a fundamental aspect and right of human beings. And when you couple those things together, right, you live in a society where there's some agreed upon set of rules about who the trusted sources are. Right. And right now, what I would say is that in a lot of ways, that was always an ideal. There's always been a faction of society that says, we reject that.
I think that's the problem going forward, is you can have a lot of good-willed people, but they're oppressed by people who want to make everything wrong.
Yeah, and that's from our perspective. I think if we were interviewing them, they would say, well, you guys are the ones that have it wrong.
Right, but we're talking about a just society, that we're looking to, you know, to have a collective understanding rather than a tribal understanding.
Yeah.
And right now we're all being pushed tribally, and we have to come back to a collective view. But I think the collective view means that we understand when people are trying to make trouble, whether they're helpful towards our goals or just want to make everything burn down.
Yeah. And that's exactly right.
Yeah. So we need to have, maybe it really takes extreme struggle to clear the air. You know, it's like after 9/11, there was so much heartfulness around among everybody, mm-hmm. because we knew we needed each other more than ever.
That's right.
And sometimes it takes that to wake people up, and hopefully for a long lasting time.
That's right. And you know, now we find ourselves sort of back in this very, at least if we're talking about politics, a very polarized environment. And that does push people in a direction of tribalism, even people who want, right, the opposite.
And right, but to protect themselves, they go to their tribe rather than exactly. Collectively.
And so that creates, you know, does it, I guess my question would be, does that create sort of a downward spiral? And if so, is there an off-ramp?
Well, yeah, maybe the time we're in right now is a time we need to be in, you know, to just be frustrated enough to try new things. And the Mayans predicted 1,000 years ago that this decade we'd be going through this period because we had to come to a place where society is much more controlled by the divine feminine, you know, the inner wisdom, more of a combination of yin and yang rather than pure yang, which has been guiding it for too long. And that's why it's killing itself off. There's too much greed and corruption, too much power, it's too hot, top heavy. So we need to find a way to bring it back to a collective.
I hope you're right, because you know, my feeling about it is, again, you know, this is, you're asking me to sort of, where I am willingly stepping outside of kind of the scientific empirical research that we've done on this, but if you were to ask me, how do we manage these group of people that have, that want to use chaos as a way to create problems? And I think the way we manage that is we don't give people who normally wouldn't agree and say, you know what, yeah, burn it all down. The way you get out of this is you move away from a society that has so much income inequality, so much corruption and greed and stratification. And then if you do move to a more horizontal society, I think more people then would want to buy into that system.
Good. Well, let's hope we can get to that place as a starting place rather than struggling to even find a starting place. So we're actually at the end of the show. Kevin Arsenault, A-R-C-E-N-E-A-U-X. Is there some website, some place that people can be directed to?
Oh, yes, yes. So I've got, you know, websites and Twitter handles. The easiest thing to do actually is to just type my name into Google, because of my affiliation with the university, Google, not because I'm famous or anything, but because Google, you know, privileges links that are connected to things like universities, people will be able to find me.
Great. Kevin Arsenault, thanks so much for being an energy steward. It's so great to talk to you about this.
No, this was a lot of fun. Thank you for having me on.
My pleasure. And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at PRN.FM. I can be reached at peter@heartriver, heartriver.org. I'd love to hear from you, and thanks so much for listening. Thank you.